Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today, Rabideau, we're going to be having a really exceptionally delicious segment of our trip in Umbria.
So much
fun.
In the much, much ignored. Everyone in Umbria tells us that Umbria is for passing through between Lazio and Tuscany, or between Rome and Florence, and they don't think it should be that way.
And after the time
we spent there, we absolutely agree. We've been there before, but it has been indeed with something of a corridor mentality. But in doing our research on this wonderful region, we discovered, mostly because of Anne's love of a wine made from Sagrantino grapes grown in the vicinity of a town called Montefalco, a very small part of Umbria. We stretched that part of our trip to Italy to look at some more food and some more wine.
And the people were just extraordinary and extraordinarily good fun.
They were indeed.
And the spirit of the place is just, it goes beyond any particular.
Yeah, and aside from food and wine, the story of Umbria, like the story of many parts of Italy, is a story of families. And I say that first because the first business we're going to talk about is a family business that goes back, just about 700 or 800 years.
A little bit.
In a town called Torgiano. The family name is Lungarotti, and the Lungarottis have owned the land around there for, as I mentioned, a large number of centuries. But more recently, in the last three generations, have really reinvented what it meant to be a wine-producing family in Umbria, and similar things have happened elsewhere in Italy as well. Because after the Second World War in 1945, some people say around 1950, some people say around 1960, the system of owning and working the agricultural land of Italy changed dramatically from a sharecropper scheme to one where the owner of the land in many cases actually gave some of it to the peasants, and some of them stayed and worked on it. In other cases, the peasants went off to work in the factories, left agriculture altogether, and left the landowners having to figure out for themselves how to run it. So that led to some significant changes, and families that wanted to take an opportunity to change and greatly improve the quality of the production of grapes and other crops had the opportunity to do that, so they did, and the Lungarottis were certainly among them. It turns out that aside from just having a wine dimension, although they make extremely fine wines in the Montefalco area and in the area around Torgiano near Perugia, the provincial capital, they also decided they should have a hotel and a spa. This is about 15 years ago, so they have an extraordinarily luxurious complex.
Yeah, I didn't get to deal with the spa.
Oh, what a shame. Well, you got to tour it.
I mean, how many hours did they say for me to get the full treatment?
6 hours. We didn't have 6 hours to spare. We did have time to spend a delightful overnight, have the opportunity to tour the vineyard, and also to tour two museums, one for olive oil and one for wine, which the family has created in the little town of Torgiano. So talking to us about the entire operation, Chiara Lungarotti, who is the current generation in charge of everything Lungarotti in Torgiano and around. So here she is.
A lot of people think Italy is about monuments. It's about churches, it's about forums in Rome, it's about Colosseums. But On the Menu has discovered something different over the years, that the true Italy is about families. Families that know they can go back several centuries, sometimes 10 centuries on this trip. 13 centuries was the longest we came across. The land that this family still owns today was given them by King Otto in the year 910. So it was really exciting when we were able to make contact with another of these great Italian families called Lungarotti, and we're privileged today to be talking to Chiara Lungarotti, who today runs most of the commercial operations. Chiara, welcome to On the Menu today. Give us an idea of the scope of the things you're responsible for.
Thank you, Peter. It's a true pleasure being with you today and having the opportunity to tell you about Lungarotti and about Umbria, the wonderful region, the green heart of Italy where we are living. Our family is based in Torgiano with the main part of the operations. We also have a small estate in Montefalco where we produce Sagrantino and Rosso, but the main part of our vineyards are in Torgiano. We are a family company. My father, after World War II, started to focus on one of the production of the state, that was wine. And so he started to replant all the vineyards and make Umbria known around the world as a great wine region. Long time has passed since then, and today the company is a women-run company. Unfortunately, my father left us 13 years ago, and today there is my mother, who is in charge for all the cultural activities of our family, a world-class wine museum where we have rebuilt all the history of wine and of its links with our Mediterranean civilizations that has been considered by the New York Times the best of Italy and one of the most important.
Yeah, it's beautifully researched, all the information that's been gathered, weaving the story of wine together with the story of man and history up to the present day, and surprisingly, so many things that over the centuries haven't changed very much at all.
Definitely. And it's fantastic to see how wine has been a such important part of life for the Greeks, for the Romans, for the Etruscans even before, and then how it has been so important in Italian culture through the centuries.
But you've done one. The Lungarotti family, along with some others, has done something very, very important, and that is to focus on constantly improving the quality of the grapes and the wines.
Oh, well, Peter, you know, we absolutely have every day to work very, very hard in the vineyard, because for us, the great quality of the wine is a condition sine qua non. And
sine qua non. Now that's not Italian.
It's Latin. that's part of our roots.
That's a previous version of Italian.
It's part of our roots.
Beautifully done. Beautifully done, Chiara.
And so quality today is a condition sine qua non. And in order to obtain and to offer to our consumer the best quality of our wine, we have to work very, very hard. First of all, in the vineyards. And we already know in winter time, with the winter pruning, which kind of wine we will obtain from the grapes coming from that very vineyard. And this allowed us to work in the best way in order to bring very good, wonderful quality of grape to the winery.
Now, you have a very large production. How many types of wine do you produce?
We produce almost 20 different kinds of wine between Torgiano and Montefalco wineries. And we like to put our fingerprint. We wanted to offer to our consumer something unique. Either you take an entry-level wine, or you take our top range wine, that's Rubesco Riserva Vigna Monticchio.
Is that what we had last night?
Yes, that's the delicious wine that we had last evening.
Wonderful.
But you're saying that there's something unique about Lungarotti that you've designed into every one of the wines that you make.
Yes, we try to transmit with our everyday passion, we try to transmit to the wine our soul, our feeling, and once you will taste Rubesco, close your eyes, you can feel yourself in Umbria. You can feel all the smoothness, all the roundness of our wonderful hill. We are here in Torgiano, right in the heart of the green heart of Umbria. We are right 20 minutes away from Assisi, 10 minutes driving from Perugia. But we are so near to Siena, just 1 hour driving. I know, because I drive there every week, as my husband is from there.
Yes.
And from Florence, 1 hour and a half, as well from Rome. So we are in the middle of central Italy.
Now, I was just going to say, what she's saying, I just want the listeners to understand that it's they don't pitch tents in the vineyards. You have a very elegant hotel, which is where we're staying now. Tell us about this hotel.
Well, we have a five-star resort and spa that was opened to the public in 1978. At that time, there was nothing here in Torgiano where to host people coming to visit us or to visit the wine museum. And so we decided to open a small resort. It was just 15 rooms, and today it has almost 50 rooms. And there is a spa where we have, that's called Bella Uve, where we have all wine treatments. So
give us an example of this.
Oh, I give you the typical wine therapy example that I love to take sometimes, because one very important thing of here is the quality of life we have. So we work hard, very hard, but we manage to enjoy all the single little joys of life. And what better than a relaxing massage with a scrub with wine and a special salt, then a short Turkish bath, and then a wine bath, and then a massage with our extra virgin olive oil from Torgiano.
Oh, wow. Yes, mention the olive oil, which is also superb, and that you have distribution around the world of that olive oil?
Yes, we have distribution around the world. In the States, we are distributed by Williams-Sonoma, where there is a special label. We have, and we export in other countries around the world. We export almost 45-50% of our production all over the world.
Now, how did you manage to set up those arrangements? That must have been quite a challenge.
Sorry.
How did you manage to establish all the connections that let you reach the rest of the world with your products? I was going to ask you about the wine as well. You must have had to work very hard to do that.
Oh, yes. It's very hard, but already my father has this big intuition at the end of the 60s. Not just working for Italy, Italian market, for the domestic market, but to export, to make his product known. And so our first market was UK, and then he arrived to US, and from there he spread step by step all over the world.
So that was already happening, but I'm guessing that you might have had some influence in that getting even larger.
Then, today, we enlarged to all the new countries. We enlarged to Far East, to China, to Singapore, Thailand, Japan, Korea, and we added some new markets like Russia. That's such an important market for Lungarotti today.
And wine, Russia is a big market?
It's a fantastic market. We are also on Ariel Flood business class.
So, oh, okay.
In all the countries where there is a particular interest about Italy, Italian wine is always very loved. And today we are traveling around the world in order to promote our wines and to people make understand how they are essential part of our lifestyle. And when you come to Torgiano, you truly experience our lifestyle.
Now tell us also, there's another element here that has been creating a lot of excitement and bringing food tourists, I guess it would be, to Torgiano, is your cooking school.
Oh, yes, thank you.
And that festival you were telling us about. Explain all of this.
We started with Alma, the very famous Italian cooking school whose dean is Gualtiero Macchesi. They're based in Colorno, near Parma. We started to organize cooking classes in a program called Food and Art Italian Experience. You come to Torgiano, there are classes for foodies who want to learn more about Italian wine.
I love the kitchen with all those
stations
and the induction cooktops.
Yes, and there are 20 hands-on positions, all with induction fires and with all the facilities. And there is an Alma chef that comes for these cooking classes, and they have cooking classes in the morning. In the afternoon, the people, the visitors, go to take visits about wineries or olive mill or other kind of laboratory or production places. And finally, they can go even in the evening to visit our town of Umbria, like Assisi, Perugia, Spoleto, and why not, as it is so near Siena, Florence, Rome.
It seems so ideal.
It's a nice way how to enjoy
oh, yes.
a week in the peace of Umbria.
Yeah, and this is a lovely small town, is it not? Now, its origin is historical, that it was part of an outlying defense system for the city of Perugia.
Yes, but it has Roman origins, Torgiano.
Roman, okay. Roman
and the name Torgiano comes from the fact there was a tower dedicated to the Roman god Janus.
Oh, okay.
And so it's Torre di Giano, Torgiano. And we choose also this name for another white wine we produce. And then, during the Middle Age, Torgiano was refounded, and it was one of the castles in the defense around Perugia. And at the same time, it was the source of all the products, of all the country products for Perugia marketplace. So it was a very, very strict link between Torgiano and Perugia. We are just 10 minutes driving. And I have to say that we are still the countryside that the town looks for.
Well, we have, the only sadness that we have is that
we must
leave today. But we leave having had a great experience of all the things that we've talked about in this interview. And listeners, we can encourage you to taste this wonderful olive oil, to enjoy these beautiful wines, and to take the opportunity to use Treveselle as a place from which to explore the region of Umbria, for which, Chiara, I know you're an international spokesperson.
When I'm traveling, I promote
Umbria.
I promote Umbria, and I think that more and more we, all people from Umbria, or winemakers from Umbria, do the same thing, because we are all extremely fond of our land.
It's
extremely
beautiful, fond beautiful
of
section.
Our wonderful.
And too many people do not know and have not experienced.
Well, we're going to emphasize that right now, listeners. Umbria is not just for passing through.
No.
Grazie. Grazie, Peter.
Umbria is a place to stop.
It's a destination.
And then you can just turn around and go back to Rome or wherever and go home. There's not really a particularly strong reason to go on to Toscana, because Toscana is way too crowded. Anyway.
Let's say that Umbria, it's an expression of central Italy, without the crowd that
yes.
you can find in Toscana.
That's put very well.
The curious thing is, and your neighbors in Lazio undoubtedly would agree, they would say they probably don't get even as much respect as Umbria does.
Well, anyway, you know, that Umbria is considered one of the next, of the frontier, the new frontier of Italian wine in the next years. And when Bob Parker told that, we were all very excited to be put together with Campania or Puglia.
Oh, that's great. So the emperor said this was pretty good.
So let's say that's something that put light on and focus on Umbria, and that's important for us. Anyway, all what Lungarotti stands for, it's can easily be visited just to have a glance on our website,
which is
www.lungarotti.it. And we have, of course, all the new media connections with all the people at the winery that takes care about that.
Yeah, even though we are living a part of history, you have total internet access. You have all the modern technologies built into this. They're not standing out so that they are distracting, but they're all here. But
always the balance between tradition and innovation under every point of view, in the vineyards, in the winery.
Yeah, even a shower that Anne just adored. Wasn't it a wonderful wonderful rain shower? So every little thing is thought of, so you can regard yourself as a piece of history or as a part of something modern, reinventing history. And I think that's probably the message that I get, Chiara, I get from you most, is that through you and your mother and your father before you and other members of the family, you've reinvented.
And my sister as well, of
yes,
course.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
do every day.
But you have reinvented what it's like to be Umbrian.
Yes.
And what it's like to be a citizen of the world sharing Umbria. So we are delighted to have shared it with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you to you. Grazie.
You.
And we'll be back with more after a short break.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and next up we have somebody that we had interviewed before, but we really got to know him a lot, as well as his wife, his chef, and many other people in the Capri household and business.
Indeed, a fascinating chef who lives in the winery called Salvatore.
Yes, we had a ball. We went lunch, dinner.
Yeah, we went out for the evening, two places we should mention, in a little town called Bavagna.
Oh, that's a sweet little place.
We actually stayed in Montefalco, but we went to dinner in Bavagna. And we had a aperitif before dinner at La Bottega di Assu. Apparently, the owners must be good friends of Marco's, because we took a picture of a crowd of people there that might find its way to our website.
If we can locate it.
No, I found it.
Oh, good.
And then we went to a wonderful little trattoria called La Trattoria di Oscar, where Chef Filippo Artioli and his wife Enza run the whole thing.
Yeah, and this chef is really great. I mean, he's not a cook. He is a regular trained chef, and the restaurant is delightful. I did not expect to have two such enormous meals in one day, but somehow we managed, although it took us into the evening a long ways.
Anyway, well,
and you know what? Wasn't it fun?
It was a wonderful day, but let's not forget the objective of this introduction was to introduce Marco.
Oh, right. Who was our host?
And his marketing person, Eleonora, at Arnaldo Capri in Torre di Montefalco.
Sometimes I think that we have just too much fun. We've had the most spectacular lunch at Arnaldo Capri Winery with their private chef, and with Marco Capri, and with Eleonora Barzi, and others. And we just had a fabulous lunch. We're going to talk to some of the principals now to talk about what we had, what we drank with it, and some of the new programs that are coming up that you can also share. We're going to start out with my new favorite best friend, Salvatore Denaro, which means money in Italian. Salvatore.
Grazie.
Who is a fellow Siciliano.
Siciliano, ma vivo in Umbria. I live in Umbria.
But he lives in Umbria.
35 years.
How many?
35 years.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. But tell us, Salvatore, what exactly is your background? You had your own restaurant in Umbria that was a great success. Mention it, because a number of people will know it.
Bacco Felice.
Happy Bacchus.
Dionysos, the god of wine.
Yes, the god of wine. What did you fix for us today at this private lunch, which is, by the way, the most charming room and a very charming vineyard?
Oh, thank
for
you.
For tasting and special events and so forth. But here we are in the kitchen at this wonderful long table, and I came in and I was entranced by things such as your fava beans.
Fava beans from Sicily. Fava gigante, giant fava from Leonforte. It's fresh fava beans with pecorino e capocollo. It's antipasto.
Yes.
Antipasto. After fava beans with onions, fresh onions, and spring onions. In the pasta alla vignerola. Pasta alla vignerola con artichoke, carciofi.
I might mention that he grows these things, like artichokes and other ingredients, in his own garden here in Umbria.
My garden, the artichoke, fava beans, garlic, and pancetta.
You don't make your own pigs. You don't do your own pancetta.
Pigs homemade. Homemade.
He does.
Yeah. Hi to everyone.
This is Eleonora Martz.
Yes, Salvatore owns a vegetable garden, and he has some pigs.
He raises pigs.
Yeah, in vegetable garden too. So it's kind of, you know, really sustainable way to cook.
Yeah, one of the marks of Salvatore's cooking his thinking, his philosophy of food, and also of the winery is sustainability. And except you brought the favas from Sicily.
The fava, Sicilian fava, la fava siciliana è la migliore.
They're the best.
Right. So anyhow, and we followed this now after I had stuffed myself with fava and all the other things. We then moved on to pasta with what?
Pasta alla vignerola. Prima con pancetta rosolata in padella con aglio e un po' di olio. After artichoke. Per 10 minuti
for
rosolare, un po' di acqua calda per tenere morbido sia la pancetta che i carciofi e solo alla fine, quando la pasta è quasi cotta, anche le fave sgusciate proprio e per mantenere quel colore verde, green, evergreen, quel colore verde meraviglioso, un po' di peperoncino e perché no anche un po' di black pepper.
Okay, for the pasta alla vignarola, that is a name that Salvatore created for this special recipe. First of all, you have to put some extra virgin olive oil with some fresh garlic and then add pancetta, okay, just fry a little bit. After that, you have to put fava beans for a while, but just, you know, for a few minutes, because the fava beans has to be green, still be green. So just for a couple of minutes, and then, of course, put the pasta, cooked pasta, and then just, and then toast for a little bit, and then put over some black pepper, or if you prefer, some chili pepper. And Parmesan, for sure, to complete everything in the classical Italian style.
Well, this was scrumptious, and I thought, actually, that was dinner, because I ate all so much up to this point. Then we moved on, however, from the pasta. We had yet another course, which was the secondo, and you had pollo
alla diavola. Pollo alla diavola, si, the grilled chicken.
Alla diavola.
Con delle spezie speciali che preparo per me, che sono con rosmarino, salvia, sale, pepe, peperoncino e foglie di mirto di Sardegna. Tutto viene macinato finemente e poi con olio e aceto fatto in casa, per coprire il pollo è cucinato sulla carbonella. Molto interessante.
Molto interessante, sì.
Allora. Concerning this special recipe, this free-range chicken roasted alla diavola.
Which is so tasty.
Yeah, great taste for sure. Salvatore is used to prepare a really special spicy mix, okay, made with rosmarin.
The myrtle from Sardinia. Oh, yeah.
Myrtle from Sardinia, chili peppers and salt, for sure, black pepper, of course, everything mixed. And he used to put everything with olive oil and vinaigrette, special recipe of vinaigrette for sure, handmade from Salvatore. So everything mixed, and he is used to cook the chicken really slow, in a slow way, just to put every couple of minutes this special mixture on it. So after 1 hour, the chicken is ready to be tasted.
And meanwhile, you're smelling all these herbal aromas, and it's heavenly. I thought then that was the end of the meal. We forgot to mention the local bread, which is not made here, but is typical, and it's cooked in a wood-fired oven. What actually is in that? Is that what's unique? Is this a wood-fired oven?
In forno. In forno.
Right.
Sì, è possibile farlo in forno.
It's very rich tasting, sì, sì. That was regular flour.
È possibile, il pollo solitamente si fa in forno, ma io preferisco grigliarlo.
Oh, grilled.
Okay. Ancora una ricetta più pratica, molto diffusa in campagna, in country, è il pollo all'arrabbiata, sì, in padella con peperoncino, rosmarino, aglio e aceto. Sì, o limone. Se
you get so excited, Salvatore, that you're cooking. This is a man who cooks with great passion, and it
Thank
shows.
Thank you.
Now, we're moving on to the dessert course, which was rather astounding because a lot of people see mulberry trees and think that there's not much value in the mulberries. Of course, I feel differently because I had a favorite mulberry tree in my garden when I was a child. But you have a special feeling about mulberries, and you created this dessert with that and your rose petals. Talk us about that.
Hai ragione, Anna. Ho uno speciale feeling per il gelso mulberry, a tal punto che ne ho 24 piante che hanno circa 25 anni. E la mia eredità per il mondo, perché questi alberi vivranno almeno 300 anni nel futuro. E sono bianchi e rossi. Io faccio un dessert bianco, white.
Bianco, I never knew that. Okay. White ones as well as the purple.
Con quelli rossi faccio un tipico dessert, ma conosci la granita siciliana di Gelsi, che dicono Ceuzzi. La granita, semplice, per la granita, acqua, zucchero e frutta, in parti uguali, tutto viene frullato e messo nella gelatiera, semplicissimo, ma io ho utilizzato, invece che acqua e zucchero, uno sciroppo di rose fatto da me, che ha esaltato il sapore del gelso.
I got, by the way, to smell all these things, as, like the rose water. Explain, Eleonora.
Yeah, for the mulberry sorbet recipe, Salvatore every time is used to say it's easy.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's not easy, it certainly is.
For who loves to cook, it's easy. But anyways, for the sorbet, you have to use sugar, water, and fruit with the same quantity. But Salvatore, for the special occasion, he did rose syrup instead water and sugar. He used this rose syrup, okay, with of
rose
course mulberry
syrup.
Yeah, rose
he,
syrup,
I mean,
and
watched,
mulberry,
and he has the actual rose petals that are boiled, I guess, and then he takes cheesecloth and wrings out the essence of them, and it's a gorgeous aromatic liquid and beautiful color.
And really great smell and taste.
Pops the mulberries.
Yeah. Crazy.
And it's frozen, so it's lightly frozen, so that it's really refreshing.
Yeah, and for sure, Salvatore grown his rose in his vegetable
roses.
Garden. For sure. Everything is handmade.
I would like to ask Marco Caprai, tell us what wines we had. Tell us, by the way, you've been on our program before, and you gave the history of your vineyard, your family's vineyard. You're a top star in the Umbrian wine arena, I would say, I guess. Tell me, your special wines are the Sagrantino is the one that I like so much. What else do you make?
We have drink today with the food of Salvatore, a fantastic Sagrantino with the granita of mulberry, and the Sagrantino is a fantastic wine also with the granita. Today was a special pairing with on the menu radio.
It's really amazing to be able to pair a red wine with, first of all, pasta, then chicken, diavolo, and then mulberry sorbet. This is an extraordinarily versatile wine. It's no wonder it's your 25th anniversary of making it, and you're very proud of it.
Yes, it was very unusual to drink a Sagrantino with the granita. It's a very great surprise today, made by Salvatore. And this is also the special story of the Italian food, and that every day you can make something of different, and every day you can taste something of a different product of the biodiversity, the product of the culture, of the food that we have in the country, in this fantastic country that the name is Italy. With Salvatore, we have started a project of experience in a winery. Experience in the winery, a very special cooking class with a tour in the vineyards, a tour in the garden, keep out the product of the garden, and to make a special menu every day for the guests of the estate.
So it's sort of a cooking class, but it's not a cooking class. It's sort of a cooking experience.
It's a special experience. I think that the food is a special experience. We can eat every day with the normal food, but when we are outside of the house, when we are around the world, it's important to inside in the culture of the place. And we have organized the cooking class with Salvatore with the idea to make an experience with the food of Salvatore.
So, listeners, you can't be jealous of On the Menu for being here because you have the opportunity to come for yourself. Now, Marco, can they get information about when this is available through your website?
Yes, it's possible to have information in the website, in arnaldocaprai.it.
Now that's Arnaldo with a hyphen, with a dash?
Arnaldo Caprai.
But is there a dash between them or not? No. Arnaldo Caprai with no punctuation, .it.
.it.
And I think you can also sign up for a newsletter?
Yes.
And Anne has something further she wants to ask.
I wanted to make sure that in addition to coming and doing a tour of the winery and doing a tasting, that our listeners understand that they can come for special events here of all sorts and even from cooking programs through Salvatore. Is that not true, Marco?
Yes. We have a bouquet of activity. The normal activity is the tour and tasting. We have an activity with the agronomist, a tour of the winery, and after we have the activity with the food, and the activity with the food is the experience with Salvatore.
And I can tell you, listeners, that all I can tell you is that everyone who walked in the place immediately went to Salvatore and gave him a big bear hug. So you understand the kind of person we're dealing with. Everybody loves Salvatore, and I do too. Salvatore, grazie mille.
Molte grazie, Anna. Grazie, grazie a Peter, ad Anna. Grazie.
And thank you also, Marco and Eleonora.
Thank you to all, and thank you to the
we
main
love
radio.
You. It feels like being home here.
And we're going to be back after a very well-deserved break. You deserve it, too.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back, and I must say, well, Peter will probably tell you the story, but if we had not gone to Visane before leaving Umbria, we would have indeed been sorely lacking in what we understand about the dining scene there.
We didn't even know that. I had actually heard of the restaurant before and heard of the chef owner. He's something of a legend in this region of Italy, in fact, in Italy as a whole. But it was Marco Caprai who said to us, have you ever been to Visani? And we said, no, we've heard about it. He said, well, you must promise me that you will go to Visani before you leave Italy on this trip. I insist upon it, and I'll call them to tell them you're coming.
Yeah, so we've
been. So I guess we were sort of stuck, and we discovered, indeed, Marco had called and said we were coming. They were expecting us. We had a most entertaining and interesting interview with Chef Visani. We had a beautiful meal.
It was really elegant. It was a totally different experience.
Yeah, turns out the sous chef's been there for something like 20 or 25 years, and he's from Eastern Asia somewhere, I think Chinese or Japanese, I'm not sure which. And the decor was absolutely fascinating.
This guy he did all the decor himself, Abisani, that is.
But he has a wonderful group of craftsmen who are actually creating his vision.
But his vision is so very sophisticated, very contemporary. His art collection is to die for.
Well,
all in all, it was a fabulous.
Well, the answer is you just have to go there. You have to be, if you're as close as Orvieto, it's about 25 kilometers from Orvieto, right along the shore of a lake. It's a little bit hard to find, but of course, as usual, we managed to find it.
And the food is
extraordinary.
Wonderful.
The wine was excellent to match. We had a great old time, and it was almost our last day in Italy, so we left with a bang.
Yes.
Thank you, Signor Visani and your crew. And here you are talking to us.
We are actually doing what we were told to do by our good friend Marco Capri, who said, you cannot leave Italy without visiting my friend, the best chef in Italy, who is Gianfranco Visani. And so here we are. We are so pleased to see you, Gianfranco, and to be able to talk to you. You are, in many other people's words, the most amazing, totally amazing chef in Italy. Where did you come from? You've been at this business for quite a long time. Our listeners would certainly like to hear a little bit of your background.
Dalla terra, io vengo dalla terra. Nel 1948 mio padre vendeva panini, aveva un genere alimentare al paese, un piccolo paese qui sopra, ma lui capiva, essendo commerciale molto, che non poteva andare avanti, e allora praticamente voleva fare, lui era commerciante nato, vendeva la porchetta, vendeva tutte queste cose umbre, non crude, gli piacevano cucinarle, perché sua nonna, sua mamma, era una grande cuoca, che poi anche dalle parti di una certa generazione erano tutti. Noi veniamo dalla terra, dalla terra contadina, dove c'era una grande cultura del mangiare, del food, e c'erano queste tavolate lunghe alla Toscana, con questi tavoli rettangolari e queste casse panche, che poi non ci mettevano il cuscino per poterci alzare prima, perché se no dormivano lì, invece bisognava alzarsi in piedi, era legno,
sì.
Cioè, capito? E allora lui ha sempre avuto questo spirito creativo, mio padre, di poter dare qualche cosa. Poi ha comprato qui con tanti sacrifici, abbiamo comprato qui, abbiamo fatto questa piccola capannina, tutto in tufo, c'erano tutte capanne con le canne. Sì, con le canne. Non c'era la corrente, c'erano le scitilene. Sai quando le scitilene sono da noi, quando si va sotto il terreno per i minatori che avevano quelle luci qui, no? E con il gas noi la corrente non c'era. C'era solamente le elettriche.
The all start with the father on the 1948, and he had a shop up on Civitella del Lago, a place that is just called here, and he had a shop and he loves his job, and he just sell porchetta here, so the traditional products here in Umbria. But he and his mother well, and so it was like a tradition of the family, the cuisine. So he just realized that the things not just go to find well, and he decide to take this place and start with a little restaurant, but it's like where they cook traditional things, traditional dishes.
Okay, he really likes tradition, and he doesn't like chemical experimental cooking.
No, he stopped.
Let him tell us, ask him to tell us about what he doesn't like about the new younger generation of experimental cooking.
Yeah.
Ma io penso che stiamo andando in un momento, in una fase come gli anni 60, quando, oppure Carême nel 1720, sai Carême, grande chef
francese,
nel 1720, per fare un piatto di Carême ci volevano 20 cuochi, e lui diceva sempre che bisognava abbassare, cioè erano troppi, bisognava togliere, bisogna fare una cucina più rapida. Oggi, come gli anni 60, il boom economico in Italia, c'erano prima, si produceva nelle grandi cucine San Pietro in polistirolo, su pasta di riso, il maialino, e si produceva il fagiano montato su strutto, oppure l'oca, tutto con piume. Oggi questi lavori sono costosissimi e non si possono fare. Oggi invece ha preso il risultato la chimica. La chimica perché dobbiamo, a parte in un momento di crisi così, dobbiamo abbattere i costi. I costi che cosa significa? Produrre prima per rivendere poi. Cioè, per abbattere i costi diventa una cosa forzata, la genuinità del prodotto la perdiamo con questi passaggi che noi possiamo fare o con la CO2 o con l'azoto. Cioè, perché? Perché sono a basse temperature e non abbiamo più la fragranza, l'eleganza del, non c'è più la ricerca dell'orto del mercato che si faceva una volta. Oggi c'è un cambio, forse per far stravedere al pubblico che loro sono più bravi degli altri, però la base fondamentale, noi possiamo raccontarci la cucina come vogliamo, ma la base principale di tutto questo discorso è che attualmente in Italia non è più la cucina dei bucatini con le sarde o risotto alla milanese oppure o la iotta di Trieste o i taglierini alla piemontese o le pappardelle al sugo di lepre che fanno in Toscana, non è più quella. Oggi è una cucina sciapa, non sa di niente, ha perso la caratteristica, ha perso questa grande forza che è la cucina, la forza, il sapore, non grandi piatti come si mangiava una volta perché bisognava smaltirli nelle campagne, perché si andava a lavorare, a zappare la terra e allora bisognava mangiare piattoni così perché uno doveva assimilare per produrre, cioè per mantenere il grasso, ma poi li distruggeva quando andava nella campagna. Oggi bisogna mangiare un piatto di gnocchi, cioè giusto, fatto bene, ma con il sapore, con il piacere, dice, lo vorrei un altro, ma non posso perché mi ingrasso.
He said that in the 1720, he said that there was a big chef, Karem, that he just cooked in his cuisine, had 20 chefs that to prepare his dishes, and so it was just a complicate cuisine. Same was in the 1960, the same thing. So the old chefs with elaborate dishes meant, but today is total different because all chefs just cook with these young chefs, yeah, with the chemic ingredients, so they can prepare the dishes before. And then to just for the time, and so their dishes, there is no sense of the taste. Yeah,
no,
they cannot taste the real product of the dishes. And so I think that today all dishes, this kind of dishes with the chemic ingredients, they don't have elegance, they don't have just the taste. And for him, it's important, these things. So he preferred to just taste a good play a dish of gnocchi, just a little dish, but to get the flavor, yeah, flavor, and be satisfied to eating this dish.
Our translator, by the way, Veronica, you know, is the assistant to Gianfranco, and also the wife of Gianfranco's son Luca.
Si. Yeah.
I must say that we appreciate the time that Gianfranco has given us, because he not only runs this fabulous restaurant, he has special events, he consults to other restaurants, he is on television, everything. Again, a dynamo. But while we have him here talking to us, would he please just describe in his own words with the idea behind the dishes on the menu today?
Immenso. Una volta di portare la grande cucina a riviverla, non la grande cucina in senso di denari, anche un piatto povero, ma riportarlo sulle nostre tavole. C'è stato uno stravolgimento totale che è stato sicuramente il problema fondamentale, è stato Ferradria, che ha stravolto la cucina, che questo qui ha sbagliato, e noi ne pagheremo le conseguenze, perché non abbiamo più l'interesse e la cultura. non è più cucina. Cioè, come si fa a fare una boccetta di profumo e farti sentire i profumi? Cioè, io delle volte mi dico, ma o siamo stupidi noi o c'è qualche cosa non funziona. Cioè, mi vergogno. Scrivere questi menù così come una volta veniva scritti con la china è il nostro sogno, riportando in visuali a vedere lo stesso piatto. È il sogno che abbiamo perso per strada. È tutto, vedi, come si può creare una cosa e quando noi andiamo dentro il ristorante, appena che arriviamo, ti cominciano a spruzzare tutte queste cose. Cioè, veramente, non abbiamo più palato, la voglia di vivere. Noi siamo umani, vedi, ciccia, testa, mente, gambe, parliamo, discutiamo, cerchiamo di fare una cosa bella. Cioè, questo è quello che deve risultare. Noi, per fare questi piatti, noi siamo come dei grandi pittori, come Van Gogh, De Chirico, Monet, Renoir, Scandinsky, che noi ci mettiamo lì. Se la mattina ci sentiamo, il piatto funziona. Se la mattina non, sai, quelle mattinate buie, quelle mattinate, noi non riusciamo a produrre il piatto. Il piatto esprime dal cuore. La cucina è il cuore, il sentimento, che va di là di ogni cosa. Cioè, come fa, secondo te, un Renoir, un Monet, oppure magari un Velázquez, a fare una cosa del genere? Velázquez mica la mattina aveva quel momento, quel sentimento. Tutti i pittori non è che hanno fatto 2 miliardi di quadri, sono essenze. E così è la cucina.
Sì, no? sì, ma Veronica...
Allora, he said that he had a big dream.
Yes.
To just bring the big cuisine on the table of the Italian, of his clients. And he think that what the Ferrajia do, so with the chemic and all, it just give a problem to the cuisine, because you cannot, with his dishes, you cannot just taste.
With Adria,
yeah. You cannot taste the real sense, sense of product of the dish. And question.
Perché se lui era tanto bravo, lui ha lanciato il sasso, come si dice in Italia, lancia il sasso e ha nascosto le mani. Perché questo qui l'ha fatto per Adria, perché ha chiuso.
Adria
Clos.
Migliore che su followers.
Sì, chi segue Ferradria.
Segue, sì. Adria sta migliore che...
Ma lo sai che non sa cucinare neanche un piatto originalmente spagnolo?
So he said why he, Ferradria, just make this type of cuisine, why now his restaurant is closed?
Scusa, sì, la domanda, la mia controdomanda è poterti dire... Cosa ha lasciato? Cioè, considerando che noi siamo un popolo latino. Il popolo latino vogliono sempre strafare e mostrarsi al pubblico.
We said we are just a Latin country, so just we want to show everything, show the big, show the best.
Cioè, la razionalità tedesca o il menefreghismo inglese, cioè, lascia correre, lascia. Oppure la razionalità tedesca, il popolo latino non ce l'ha, il popolo latino vuole emergere, vuole strafare, vuole umiliare l'altro, che lui è il più bravo.
It would just demonstrate that he's the best, the Latin people, the Latin...
Ma cosa pensa a Noma, Copenhagen?
Copenaghen, Noma.
Ma bisogna vedere chi è che da chi viene giudicato.
No.
Ecco, dalla
he just said, he just, we can just know who is the...
the jurors. Well, I see.
Yeah, declare that he's
anch'io.
The best restaurant. So
ecco,
just,
scusami, sei stata a Copenaghen?
Do you have
no.
been?
Di che cosa?
Non voglio andare.
Ecco, scusa, hai saputo che cucina fa?
Oh, you didn't.
You know which kind of cuisine he's made?
Yes, Nordic, new Nordic cuisine, but it's moss? Come si dice moss?
So the chefs are like a big painter, like Van Gogh, Monet, and yeah. So do you have the inspiration to just make a dish? So if you just see the big painter, they don't just, the note made a lot of yeah. So
mistakes.
Yeah, so they have just a few things that they have realized because you need inspiration. And for him, the cuisine is a heart. So it became also, yeah, from the heart.
Okay.
Io ho creato questa zuppa di porri con il cubo di foie gras. La zuppa di porri è un piatto povero. Il foie gras me lo spinge. Mi dà quella sensazione, poi il porro ha bisogno di grasso, dunque un elemento come il foie gras che è molto grasso mi riesce a equilibrare. E poi la mela cotta nel cacao amaro, cioè sai, gli Azteca che hanno 3000 anni prima di Cristo hanno fatto l'ultima scoperta che hanno scoperto il cioccolato e hanno rinvenuto in questa anfora addirittura del cacao col peperoncino.
Sì,
sì. Allora, che noi mettiamo un brodo di cacao cotto nella mela, ti dà sicuramente una sensazione più ricca, più amara, essendo la mela è molto alla pectinina, è gelatinosa, che fa parte sempre della pettinina, cioè, ma ha sempre questo gusto un po' asprognolo, un po' così, e allora il cacao.
So the dish is the chicken soup with a cube of foie gras and apple cooked in a cacao amaro. And so this dish can just see the chicken as need just the fat of the foie gras. So it just can be leveled the chicken
balance.
The balance with between chicken and foie gras, and there is a broth of apple and cacao amaro, and the cacao and the apple can just be just give the balance to the chicken.
I thought I heard Chef say something very interesting that didn't get mentioned. He started out talking about the brodo, the soup, the zuppa, as being something that was something that poor people ate, was the cucina povera. But then he balanced that out and changed that by introducing rich ingredients like foie gras and cocoa. Is that correct?
La nobiltà è delle volte ci sono dei piatti che bisogna dargli un senso di nobiltà dando una struttura importante, perché non è una cosa semplice. Questo deve essere un equilibrio, balance su tutta l'armonia del piatto, va sempre a cascata. Cioè nessuno può creare un piatto, cioè è come studiare musica, quando Bach, oppure ti posso dire, oppure magari lo stesso Abato, oppure cioè che fanno un discorso di musica, che hanno studiato Mozart, quando studia la musica, ma se non c'è l'equilibrio, gli stona, non funziona. Cioè così sui piatti, i piatti sono come la musica. Che la mattina se non c'hai questo balance che ti dà l'equilibrio, cioè è vero, noi andiamo a portare un prodotto povero come chicken per poter valorizzare a questo punto o il caviale o il foie gras o magari, che ti posso dire, anche il capriolo, il cervo, il daino, il muflone, sono tutti elementi che sono carne, tra parentesi, dolci. Perché sono tutti dolci. Andiamo a prendere il cervo, il muflone, il daino, sono tutte carni dolci. E allora noi, il porro ti dà quella grinta in più per fartelo esplodere.
Esplodere?
Eh sì, boom! Nel palato.
See, boom. Your palate, it explodes in your palate. Sì. That's true.
Vedi, la cucina è come saper guidare una Ferrari.
Ah sì, Ferrari.
Dipende sempre dal pilota.
We now know the principle.
He said that you have to create a dish considering the balance between the ingredients. So you can use rich ingredients like foie gras, caviale, and other ingredients to just esaltare. So just give importance to the ingredients that are poor, like in this case the chicken.
So by showcasing the one, then you balance out and showcase the other.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So he said that the cuisine is like the music, so you have just to have a balance between the notes, you know. And for him, the cuisine is like a Ferrari.
Sorry, I heard.
Yeah, a Ferrari, and it depends all from the pilot.
I think that means the driver.
Yeah.
but something else the chef mentioned on the way through with large gestures was that he expected that what would happen is the flavors would explode on the plate.
Yeah. On your palate, on your mouth.
And explode on the palate, so the diner would be wonderfully surprised and excited by what they were having. And I think we concluded that what will be happening at the end of this interview, listeners, following almost immediately is a description that we created of the dishes that we are about to begin to enjoy. So, Veronica, we thank you so much for being such a patient and excellent translator. Gianfranco was summoned away by the telephone, which is ever present and ringing. So we will simply conclude by saying we hope that you will give him our best wishes. And we'll complete this interview as it was just described. And thank you so much for you and Gianfranco for joining us on the menu today.
Grazie di avermi intervistato a voi. Grazie della vostra disponibilità e della vostra persone genuine, persone semplici. Sento una persona. Io sono molto sensitivo.
Oh, grazie.
Sono molto sensitivo e sento le persone che ho di là per poter parlare. Delle volte anche le nostre interviste vengono fatte dalla persona che è di là. Se la senti vicino ti apre come un carciofo, artichoke.
Yes, carciofo.
Se non la senti diventa difficile comunicare. Le interviste delle volte sono veramente molto sensitivo e mi sento proprio. E con voi quando la simpatia di lui, vero, guarda, una persona, e voi una persona così mi avete dato la tranquillità di fare l'intervista a pieno titolo. Grazie.
Well, grazie.
You can probably understand the last bit of the interview. I did, even though it's in Italian. He was thanking us so much for such a wonderful, tranquil interview and for our interest in everything that they were doing at Pisani. And we'll be back next week in Tuscany and Umbria, so please join us again, same time, same place, and until then,
bye-bye. Thank you.